the river, meets the sea.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. I'm Rod Babers hanging out with Kevin Dunn and my man Brad Keltner. The Triple Option is back all together again. You can reach us via Twitter. I'm at Rod Babers in the Twitterverse. Brad Keltner's at Brad Keltner and Kevin Dunn at KevinDunn01. We are tracking the college football chaos in real time. And right now, gentlemen, the latest seems to be that the ACC, Pat Forty report, the ACC's ADs met today and are planning to move forward in an attempt to play. The Louisville coach probably talked out of turn, but Scott Satterfield said that he hasn't received any news from the conference commissioner or the conference administrators about delaying or postponing the season. So the ACC seems to be going as planned. We haven't heard anything from the SEC in the wake of the report that the Big Ten is going to cancel or postpone, actually, their football season to the spring. The report also states initially from Dan Patrick that the Pac-12 would follow the lead of the Big Ten. Now, that has not become official yet, but that report is out there, and the Big Ten has yet to dispute that report. So we assume that tomorrow the Big Ten will announce officially that it is postponing the college football season. The Pac-12 will follow them. Then the question remains, who does the Big 12 side with? The ACC and the SEC, who seem to be going along with the plan to at least open the college football season. Hope we can finish the college football season, but they're going to start, it seems, right now. At least that's the plan. And at the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are being reported that they're not going to go through with the college football season in the fall, postponing most probably to the spring. So the Big 12 right now is in a situation, guys, where I don't know if this makes them influential or if this makes them the useful idiot. I'm not sure if they're going to be influenced one way or the other. My best guess right now, and even Brian Davis talked about this in his most recent tweet. He said high-ranking Texas source tells him the school administrators want to play football this season. I think the Big 12 coaches and ADs want to play just like the Big Ten coaches and ADs want to play, but I'm not sure that it's going to be left up to them. Ultimately, the commissioners and I think the conference presidents are probably going to have more say about this thing in the end. That's the concern right now.
Yeah, that's a concern, that if they are not going to play, then it would probably be the presidents and the higher ups. And like I said earlier in the show, that's been a problem for a long time, even outside of COVID, trying to get head coaches, athletic directors, and presidents all on the same line, right? Yeah. And you've got three different levels there. And as you trickle down, usually it's more, hey, we're playing, we're not going to look at risk. And like I said, this is even outside of COVID. So I feel optimistic. I feel better now than I did yesterday at this time.
It's been a roller coaster of emotions for college football.
4 months.
Over the last 7 days, especially. Of course, the last 4 to 5 months. I mean, everything's been a roller coaster of emotions. But, I mean, middle of last week, we're all a little bit disappointed that we're seeing conference-only schedules in college football. But on the other hand, it's like, okay, we plan on having a season still. And the Big Ten said they're going to start on September 3rd, so that's right on schedule. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's what we want.
Rod and I did not give one negative comment on that, did we, Rod? I mean, we saw that, and it's like, okay. I mean,
things change.
And it gets back to what we're
drastically
saying. Half plans, but try and get this thing done. I don't know. What I really don't get is 5 days later saying we can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, why? Because of liability? There are a lot of reasons, but where was this 5 days ago?
We had that 5 days ago. We're all feeling optimistic that there's going to be some semblance of a college football season, even if it's not what we're used to. Then we had what happened over the weekend, right? The MAC announces that they're canceling fall sports this year, and then obviously all the reports surrounding the Big Ten and the Pac-12. And there was even a tweet that had a vote, like the results of a vote in the tweet, saying 12 of the 14 Big Ten schools had voted to not have college football this year. So I think a lot of us went to bed last night saying, oh, crap, you know, this might be the first domino to fall. Like, if the Big Ten does it and the Pac-12 does it, then everybody might do it. We might just not have college football at all in 2020. And then we have the players kind of coming out and their hashtag we want to play movement. We've got the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC all kind of hinting towards, you know, still having a season. And even in the Big Ten, right? I mean, Kirk Herbstreit had the tweet in the 4 o'clock hour basically saying that No. What they were talking about was just to delay the season, not to cancel it altogether. And it almost feels like the Big Ten is backtracking a little bit. I don't know if that's because of the court of public opinion or if something else is going on, or hell, maybe the reports that we got last night and this morning were never true. I don't know, but I'm with you, KD. I mean, even in the last 24 hours, it's been a roller coaster of, well, damn, we might not have this at all anywhere, to, all right, there's still maybe a chance that every conference is playing football, but if not every conference, at least a few of the Power Five conferences.
And I'm not sure what we said earlier, but the Mountain West, what I'm reading now, they're postponing fall sports.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's kind of what you just said with the Big Ten right there. You could say it's semantics, but not really. I mean, if you're canceling something, it's canceled.
Yeah, I mean, every fall sport, and this is not a slight at any other fall sport at all. This is just what goes into football in terms of financially and in terms of the human body and in terms of scheduling. Like, I feel like every other sport you could push back to the spring and not have the number of issues that you would have if you pushed football back to the spring. Like, I think football is the most difficult one of all the fall sports to actually postpone and play two seasons in one calendar year. So, you know, even if, and it might be bad optics, but even if the Big 12, the SEC, and the ACC, if they just said they're playing football this fall, like, I don't think that would be that huge of a deal if the other stuff gets postponed to the spring. I just don't think you can do two football seasons in one year. Like, that doesn't seem feasible to me. I don't think the human body can take that, and that almost seems like the players would be more at risk doing that than if they would be from anything COVID-19 related.
I can see that.
Totally agree. Just because of the injuries and the wear and tear.
Exactly.
It's a best bad idea situation. It's the Argo principle. It applies. It's not going to be a good. It's not going to be a solution that's good for everybody involved. It's going to be unfair. It's going to be unorthodox, and it's going to be weird and obtuse. So I think ultimately they're going to start the college football season. And it's not going to start, obviously, with all the Power Five conferences, because I think the Big Ten is looking for support because they jumped out there first. Remember, they're the first ones to go to a conference-only schedule, too. The Big Ten did a lot of things first. They believe they're trailblazers in this sense, and that the rest of the, you know, the Power Five schools with their academic elitism, that they should follow the Big Ten. And maybe they should. We don't know that right now. I'm glad there is at least another side to the conversation.
Yeah.
And hopefully these sides can get together and they can figure out what's best for the student athletes involved and for the schools involved. Because either way, it's tough decisions to make. You're talking about safety of young people. And that is something that you got to make your top priority. But then you're talking about the financial ruin of a lot of these institutions that won't be anywhere for these young people to play. I mean, it's going to be bad. The repercussions of not playing college football will be irreparable for a lot of programs, period.
And then as Trevor Lawrence tweeted out, we've seen this from multiple people, depending on what your situation is at home, this may be a much safer spot for you and to actually be within the, you know,
so Nick Saban
family of the football team, and obviously you're getting tested, right? I mean, they're getting tested more than anyone else is, I know.
Jim Harbaugh said the same thing. The coaches are saying that, yeah, that there will be the guys, at least with the university, they can control the testing, some of the external factors. Yes, the guys will have access, but at least they'll get tested when they come back. And there's incentive for the guys to follow the protocols because they want to play.
Yeah, right.
They know you go out there and you go to a party and you get COVID, you ain't playing, and you could mess it up for everybody in the locker room. All your guys are always going to point to you as to you, the guy that ruined the season, could have had football, and then you decide to go get some on a Saturday night when everybody else had the same issue.
Yeah, which is why if you're going to go like the Cardinals, have half the team go out.
You know, yes, if you're going to do it as a group.
You're not going to be able to pick on one guy.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not the Zach Plesac.
There's obviously no bubble in college football, but you can make the argument that it's way more of a bubble than they'd get anywhere else.
No doubt.
Right? Yeah. Especially they're getting tested three times a week, and they're trying to, you know, take care of themselves for their teammates, for their coaches, for their families. Like I saw, I can't remember who it was, but a mother of a Texas player say, hey, like,
Tyler Vaughn,
we're a hotspot right now back home. Like, he's safer down in Austin. He's safer with the college football team. I don't really want him to come back right now because it's a mess up here. Like, you've got that type of situations going on too. So And I think on the surface, it might have looked weird to some people that Trevor Lawrence is advocating for a contact sport that has no social distancing, that has traveling all over the country. Like, how could he possibly say that that's safer than not playing? But I really think if you kind of dive into it with all of the different situations that people might have away from campus, I think there is a strong argument and a strong case that these guys are safer and are actually following the protocols we're all supposed to be following more closely because they want to play football.
Let's give Trevor Lawrence some love too, guys, because yeah, there are a lot of guys right now and they're thinking this year was going to be really for what I want my life to be, right? Which is to go make millions in the NFL and to be drafted as high as possible. And a lot of times it can be that one year, right? If you're junior year, senior, Joe Burrow is a great example. Trevor Lawrence doesn't need that. He's in the minority. He doesn't need that. This guy wants to play.
Yeah.
And in 2020, that's nice to see.
If you called Trevor Lawrence an idiot, I wouldn't blame you because I don't think he has to take another snap, and he's going to be 1-1 next year in the draft. He's already won a national championship at the college level. Like, that guy seems to have more to lose than anybody else. So if you said, that guy's so dumb, like, why is he advocating to play? I wouldn't have the strongest argument against you, but I agree with you 100%, KD. I respect him a whole hell of a lot more, and I will tip the cap for just his passion for his teammates, for his coaches, for Clemson, for the fans, for the sport of college football. A guy who's got more to lose than anybody else seems to be the loudest voice to have a season this year.
L-I-V-I-N-G.
Yeah. No, I agree. He's got a lot of money on the line, living, probably more than anybody else. We got it.
Well, no, I know you did. Brad was out there doing math.
I was trying to carry the one.
He'll have, he's got $50 million guaranteed coming to him on the other side of the NFL and sponsorships and endorsements. So, yeah, it's about more than money to him. Good for Trevor Lawrence. For us, usually, it's about money, all right? It's about getting the best value, the best bang for your buck. My friends at Diamonds Direct can help you do that. Now, with Trevor Lawrence goes to the league, he won't need to get the best value, but he will need to get the best diamonds out there on the market. He probably will need that. He's got a special young lady in his life. He'll probably need an engagement ring, and I'd recommend Trevor Lawrence. I recommend anybody, no matter what your situation financially, you go to Diamonds Direct. My friends at Diamonds Direct, they have the best value, the best selection, and the best service of any jeweler retailer out there on the market. As a matter of fact, when I was looking for my engagement ring for my woman, I did all the research I could. You guys know I went down the rabbit hole, went to other cities, went online, multiple months of research trying to figure out where's the best place for me to get the best value, and I should have saved myself a lot of time and money. And that's exactly what you'll say if you go to Diamonds Direct, all right? Whether it's a designer ring, engagement ring, the diamond earrings, maybe you need a designer bracelet, whatever it is, my friends at Diamonds Direct can hook you up. You get a free service for life on any purchase. You get a 110% diamond upgrade guarantee as well, and you get a nationwide price guarantee. Nobody out there is doing it better and bigger than my friends at Diamonds Direct. Go discover the Diamonds Direct difference for yourself. It's right there in the domain next to Dick's Sporting Goods.
I think he already did that, didn't he?
Oh, did he already?
I think he did, like, within the last couple months. It may have been during COVID.
He's engaged.
I hope he went to Diamonds.
I hope he went to Diamonds Direct. But if not, I'm sure he still got it done.
Yes.
So he got a good deal on it, I bet.
Somebody probably gave him the ring in a JanSport backpack. Someone hooked him up as part of his Clemson.
He's got to buy it. Otherwise, it's a violation. So I wonder what kind of ring you can afford.
Mm.
That's why I should have went to Diamonds.
And we know that's not happening.
Exactly.
All right, guys. One final time. The Horns Top 20 Countdown presented by Altstadt Beer. We're starting it today. It'll run over the next 4 weeks. That's the hope. That's the plan. But here is the number 20 team on our countdown.
Can I get a countdown?
It's the Horns College Football Top 20, presented by Allstat Beer. Number 20, the Iowa State Cyclones.
Purdy, back to the air, floats one, wide open, touchdown ISU, Charlie Kohler.
All right, gentlemen, last time we talked about Iowa State, at least for the time being, they are number 20 on our countdown, the fourth-ranked team that we have in the Big 12. The Big 12 media also pegged Iowa State to finish in fourth this year in the conference. Gentlemen, I'll make it this easy. KD, what? Am I speaking English?
KD.
What? I'll make it easy. Iowa State, the last 2 years, has finished tied for third in the Big 12. Will they finish better than that in 2020? The same or worse?
Worse. I think they finished fourth. I think they're in the, and they could be in that fourth, fifth, area because we've talked about, I don't know what the hell to expect from K-State in year number two from Klieman, and they actually beat Iowa State, beat them by 10 to finish off the year. That was one of those disappointing games for Iowa State. They had some really close games, but that one finished the year for them, and then they went on and got the behinds kicked by my Irish. But yeah, I think it'll be Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, and Texas in that three, and I think you're going to see some separation. My biggest question with Iowa State, once again, is the offensive line. And generally, teams like Iowa State and Kansas State, when they were really getting rolling, when they have those type of years where they're finishing in the top two or top three of the conference and really are contending, it's when they've got veteran line play. Now, they've got eight starters returning on defense, Rob, so and it's a very well-coached team that maybe they get around that a little bit. And with defense, a really good running back, and a badass quarterback, they're able to manufacture enough to get some W's to put them in that spot.
It's going
to
be tough. I mean, the last time a top 15, top 20 ranked defense helped win the Big 12, you had to go back to Gary Patterson probably in 2014. And even that was a team that brought in the air raid with Meacham and Sonny Cumbie.
It still had a 70-69 game against Baylor or something.
Exactly.
Like that, right?
61-58.
Okay, yeah, that's just the Big 12.
Back when there were two true champions. Big 12.
But I like that defense. I mean, I'm a big John Heacock fan. You guys know that. They've finished in a top three scoring defense in the last 3 years, in each of the last 3 years. And that's really good, but that's not going to win them games. They're going to win games this year with Purdy stepping up, being more clutch than he was last year in those big moments, just like when they were that two-point conversion against Oklahoma and they lost by 1 point, or when they lost by Baylor. I think they lost to Baylor by 2 points. And that's a team that played in the Big 12 title. And then they lost to Iowa by 1 point, 18-17. Really close games. You look back, I mean, they flipped the script in those games, and this is a 10-win team potentially. Sounds crazy, but that's how close
they
were.
No, they would have been.
Yeah. So I think it's a really good team, but they did get blown out, right? K-State beat them, and Oklahoma State blew them out. Notre Dame beat the brakes off of them. So they had some of those appearances where they just didn't show up. That's going to be the thing this year, and BK brought it up too. In those big games, can Purdy be the best version of himself and take them to the next level? Matt Campbell and Purdy and Heacock, that is a hell of a combination, man. You got one of the best young coaches in the country, one of the best and most progressive defensive minds in all of football at any level in terms of how he defends the spread offense and the passing offense in the Big 12. And then you got Purdy, a guy who's first or a second round pick in the NFL probably next year. I think they got the right pieces. I like this team. I think they finish right at third. I think they're right there. Okay. I think it's going to be a tie for third again. Something
BK,
like that.
Did they do it?
Relatively tough schedule. I mean, it's conference only.
Yeah,
but they got OU at home, but the other top teams in the conference, at least in my opinion, Texas, Oklahoma State, and TCU are all road games for Iowa State. So they do have some tough road trips to take this year.
Good thing 8,000 people will be there.
Yeah, that might help, right? That might exactly. Completely negate the normal home field advantage you get in this conference and in this sport as a whole. I think it depends on Brock Purdy. Like, Brock Purdy has had a very similar, and it's apples to oranges in a lot of ways, but we're still talking fruit here. Kind of a similar first 2 years to Sam Ehlinger in terms of, like, his freshman year, he started a lot of games but didn't play every game, wasn't always the guy. He was in a little bit of a quarterback battle, showed some good things but also had some, like, really questionable decision-making. Like, what is this guy doing? Does he have the chops to be the QB here for the future?
Is he forcing stuff?
Exactly. Then he has a great sophomore year. Now, Purdy's sophomore year wasn't Sam Ehlinger's sophomore year statistically, but completed nearly 67% of his passes. The touchdown-to-interception ratio was better than 3-1. He was really, really good last year. Can he take that step? Like, we talked about it with Sam Ehlinger. Like, oh, my God, if Sam Ehlinger takes the same step, the same leap he took from freshman to sophomore year, if he does that from sophomore to junior year, then Texas might win the conference. They might be in the college football playoff type of thing. Like, there were national pundits basically saying stuff like that. What is Brock Purdy? Does he take that same size leap that he did from his freshman to sophomore year? Or does he kind of do what Sam Ehlinger did? And there's plenty of reasons why Sam didn't have as good as a junior year as he did a sophomore year. But is there stuff that holds Brock Purdy back from really taking that next step? Because I think they go as far as he goes. If he has a really, really good year and is even better in 2020, then I think they've got a shot to crash the party in the Big 12 championship game. But if he doesn't quite do that, I don't know if there's enough talent around him. They've got some pieces. Breece Hall, Charlie Kohler, you mentioned some of the defensive guys. They've got some pieces, but just overall roster-wise, unless Brock Purdy takes another significant step, I don't think Iowa State is on the level of the top three teams in this conference.
I don't either. Well, but they are that team that it's very easy to say that a couple weeks or a month before the season, and you actually get into it, and they punch above their weight, man.
They do, and I think K-State does too, though. I think Chris Klieman punches above it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a team last year that could have won double-digit games. They beat Oklahoma. They had three of their losses were within, I want to say, one score or 3 points. So and I think last year you had, right, a multiple team tie for third place in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. And I think TCU could have some improvements, but we know Max Duggan, there's a ceiling there if he's going to be your starting quarterback. I think there are three or four teams in the Big 12 right now that can end up right there all tied, but they're spoiling each other's party, right, upsetting other teams, just cannibalizing each other. And hopefully Texas and Oklahoma are at the top of that thing, but I wouldn't be surprised if Texas is right in there with the teams being cannibalized.
Yeah.
And they're just 7-8, no, not this year, not like 6-5 win teams.
I was going to say, I'll take 8 wins.
Yeah, I was going to say, 8 wins, I'll take 8 wins all day. With 10
9 wins all of a sudden sounds amazing.
Right.
I mean, 9 wins, it'd be great.
Yeah. I'm still holding the Aggies to those 10 wins, by the way. I'm not changing that. 10 wins was going to be a good season, so that means that you guys
stay
on the
same
table.
Yeah. No, I love it.
The Aggies and the Longhorns have the same issue. You can only lose to one team.
We
and
punch
call,
below our weight.
No, the same issue is you can only lose to one team and call your season a success. Oklahoma for Texas, Bama for A&M.
Yeah.
If you lose to any other team other than that, your season wasn't a success.
Now,
you're
just saying this year?
This year.
Okay, because any other year, LSU does own
A&M. This year for A&M, that's your standard. And for Texas, your standard is you lose to anybody in Oklahoma, then we're going to look at you sideways.
There you go.
Yeah. A&M, they're still paying their dues, man. They are still paying their dues, and I don't know how long they're going to have to pay their dues in that conference. But to get Florida and Tennessee?
Oh, man, that's rough. That's rough. It is the Horn Top 20 Countdown. We'll get to A&M a little bit later in our countdown. But the whole countdown is brought to you by Altstadt Beer. It is the triple option with RBKD. Rod Babers, Kevin Dunn, BK with y'all on a Monday. We've got the BK Lounge coming up. It's a Luka Doncic appreciation segment, and it's next.
4th and 5, the national championship on the line right here.
All the band is out on the field.
There's the pass to Leitner. Puts it up. Yes!
I don't believe what I just saw.
Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Chalmers for the tie.
Got it.
In 2 seconds.
Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler. Unreal.
In your life, have you seen anything like that?
You believe in miracles? Yes!
Now, it's time to step inside the BK Lounge. Here's your host.
Who the hell is
Brad Kellner?
Baby, if you give it to me, I'll give it to you. I know what you want. You know I got it, baby.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into the BK Lounge. August 10th, 2020 edition of the Lounge. Alongside Kevin Dunn and Rod Babers, I am BK Brad Kellner, and this edition of the BK Lounge is brought to you by Audio Visual Consultations. Give them a call, 255-8678, to get the home TV setup of your dreams. Almost said July. We're into August. This is the first show I've done in the month of August.
Is it?
I timed this out so perfectly. My last day of work before my vacation, so last Friday was July 31st. Now we're already like halfway into August. Not bad.
Chad's going to come back and be saying June.
Chad.
I'm kidding.
That's great.
I think he's got 3 more weeks he can take before the year comes to an end. All right, gentlemen, let's talk some basketball. More specifically, let's talk about a basketball player, a 21-year-old basketball player who has taken this league by storm over his first 2 seasons, and he gave us another dazzling performance over the weekend. That would be Luka Doncic. Luka magic is real, gentlemen. I don't know if you believe in magic or not, but Luka magic is real, and it was real again on Saturday night. And guys, the Mavericks weren't one of the biggest storylines going into the NBA restart, right? They were 7th seed in the West, probably were going to stay in the 7th spot in the West unless something crazy happened. We know the heartbreaker they lost to the Rockets to start off their time in Orlando. Then they lost to the Suns, and it basically eliminated a whole lot of chance of them moving up in the standings. They're not mathematically locked into the 7 yet, but that's where they're likely going to be. And there's just so many other storylines, right, with the battle for L.A., the race for 8th in the West, which has become hella entertaining. The Spurs look really good. The Suns are 6-0 in the bubble. Memphis has fallen back to the pack. That's been fun. You've had great individual performances, injuries. Ben Simmons, it's been announced that he's done for the year with that knee injury. There's plenty of other storylines out there, and there just weren't a whole lot of storylines with the Dallas Mavericks until Saturday. And one terrific game, one spectacular individual performance, one thrilling finish, and especially that one jaw-dropping play late Saturday night that thrust the Mavericks to the forefront of bubble conversation. That's the Luka Doncic effect. That's Luka magic. I mean, in a roughly half-hour span, guys, starting from when the Mavs were trailing the Bucks by 7 with 150 to go in regulation, the Mavs went from kind of bubble backdrop to spotlight. And the conversations went from, all right, yeah, this team's just not that good. They're going to be a quick out in the first round to, okay, well, maybe they're potentially dangerous. They just did this against the best team in the NBA. And the conversations changed from maybe next season to, all right, why not right now? Why not something special this year? And it's all because of Luka Doncic, who's been really good in the bubble. I mean, in the five seeding games, and the Mavs did play today. Luka did not, but the Mavs played today. But the five previous seeding games for Dallas, he had the third highest scoring average, the highest assist average, and the fifth highest rebound average of anybody in the bubble.
Is T.J. Warren leading it in scoring?
Yeah, he is.
T.J. Warren has been out of control.
He's been insane. But, like, no one's really noticed what Luka's done because the Mavs haven't been that good. And, once again, not a huge storyline. And the Mavs have choked in close games so far. Really, they've done it all year, but especially to restart the bubble in the NBA. But because of the late-game theatrics against the Bucks, it's helped that that game's on national television in primetime on a Saturday night. And KD, you talked about it earlier in one and done. I mean, the pass. Doncic's between-the-legs bounce pass with the left hand to Maxi Kleba for the dunk and the free throw with 1:18 left in overtime to give the Mavs a 5-point lead. That was next-level stuff right there.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like the dagger, and that was, I believe, number 19 of his 19 assists. I mean, but guys, his pace and his feel, he accelerates, but then he decelerates. He is, and he's so damn strong. He's, you know, we were watching Vince Carter dunk highlights during one of the breaks, and you forget about how strong he was at the rim. Luka is strong as hell. People bounce off him.
Yeah, no doubt. He's a 6'7 point guard, and he's got some bulk to him, too. He's got some girth to him, too.
He does.
I could say that, right?
You could say that.
You can say girth.
Okay. Just making sure.
People bounce off of Harden, too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, Luka ended the game 36 points, 19 dimes, 14 rebounds. He's the first player in NBA history to post a stat line like that. Did I mention he's 21 years old?
He's 21,
gentlemen?
Right.
And I think the most impressive part of his night was the fact that he had two turnovers against the league's best team, against the league's best defense. 19 assists to two turnovers in a game that went to overtime. Two turnovers for Luka. That was his league-leading 17th triple-double as well. He's the youngest player in the history of the league to lead the league in triple-doubles over the course of an entire season. He now has that mathematically locked up. He was damn near perfect on Saturday. He's played some great games in his first 2 years of his NBA career, but that may have been his best. And I just love watching the basketball world's reaction to what Luka did on Saturday night. Like Giannis, who won the MVP last year, probably going to win it again this year, said Luka's, quote, one of the most talented guys I've ever played against. He's making the whole team better, and he's going to keep getting better. As long as he's making his team better, they're going to be tough to beat. You had Ja Morant go to Twitter, say, nah, he different for real. 19 dimes, two turnovers, so tough. Trae Young, that was crazy, fam. Keep killing. I mean, everybody's on social media or talking about Luka's performance after the game. He just had the basketball world locked in on Saturday. He is must-see TV, and we saw that again on Saturday night.
He is, and he was, look, I love the freak, but he was clearly the best player on the court, at least Saturday. And you know, Giannis was not feeling the stroke. His three-point shot has gotten better. I think he's at 30%, at least throughout the year. But there are still holes in his offensive game, or at least ways to play him. I don't know how you play Luka, because you can't be nut-hugging him around the three-point line because he's going to blow by you. And what he does so well is he goes and probes and gets in the lane, and his vision and his passing ability, he's just finding guys that are spotting up left and right.
Yeah, he's just the ultimate creator. He creates in so many different ways. He can beat you in a lot of different ways. He can be the main scorer, but he can also be the guy that can be the main distributor. You can run the offense through him. And as a young player, man, I'm with you. Like his seems like his feel for the game. It's like he's been playing forever. He plays like an old, savvy veteran.
He's like Larry Bird at 37 if he could still move.
He's just like, yeah, I mean, he plays, and the game seems to move really slow for him. I don't even think he's in a grown man body yet. I still see young Luka. I still think, you know what I mean? I think his body's going to mature a little bit more, too.
I think he'll tone up a little bit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Right now, I'm not saying he's got baby fat or anything, but I think Luka's, his ceiling is unbelievable. This is a guy that's probably, I might call my shot and say he's going to win MVP next year. I mean, I think he's on that kind of pace.
I'm a little surprised he was not named a finalist for this year.
So I'm glad you brought that up, KD, because...
And I'm with you, Rod, that I see a couple of those in his future.
Yeah, and another thing that makes Luka special is his personality. So after the game, after that game, the game that he had, Luka Doncic was speaking with Dallas Morning News reporter Brad Townsend, and Luka was named a finalist for Most Improved Player of the Year, one of three finalists. He was not named a finalist for MVP, so... He was snubbed. A lot of people were upset. They thought maybe he should have been there instead of James Harden. You can make a strong case for both of those dudes. But Luka asked Brad Townsend about the most improved player and who voted for it. Townsend responded saying, 100 of us vote, including me. Luka's response, take me off the list and put Devontae Graham on there. I don't deserve to be on there.
Wow.
So after that game and that day where he snubbed off the MVP ballot, instead of bringing that up or asking about that or saying, hey, who's the MVP now? Wow. He brings up how somebody else was snubbed in his spot for an award that he was a finalist for. He's just awesome, man.
That's
like,
pretty crazy.
I pinch myself a lot that this guy is on my favorite team. I mean, the little Dallas Mavericks, right? A team who has been one of the most unlucky franchises in the history of the sport. A team that hasn't had a whole lot of success and didn't really have any success until Dirk got there. The fact that they go from a legend in Dirk to a future legend in Luka is just... pretty unreal. So I don't know if this is the year for the Mavericks. I don't think it is, but it's pretty damn cool that they were the talk of the NBA bubble over the weekend. And who knows, maybe they'll be the talk of the bubble come playoff time, all thanks to some Luka magic. He is special. He's special now, and he is going to be special in the future. There's no doubt about that.
His mama's special, too.
His mama is special.
Mama is special. Yeah, he's got some genes there. Well, you know what? I'll say this for all the Mavs fans listening, or if you're just kind of watching them and following along. I mean, I've kind of almost turned into a pseudo Mavs fan just because they're so, because he is so much fun to watch and then around them. And I like Porzingis too. I kind of like the how they're utilizing him.
Yeah.
And he didn't shoot the ball very well on Saturday, but it does take me back to being a Bulls fan. And I'm not comparing Luka to Michael, but he is a special young player. And it was fun watching them. It wasn't fun at the time, but I'm going to tell y'all to have fun now. Because it can be frustrating, and any growth can be frustrating, but watching them learn how to close stuff out, and they're not there defensively yet. They got to get better defensively, and I guess that's my question to you, BK. Where is he individually defensively?
Man, right, he's playing his best defense he's ever played. I mean, I'm not going to call him an elite defender by any stretch. I'm not even sure calling him an above-average defender is fair, but Rick Carlisle talked about it after that game on Saturday. Like, he's playing his best defense, and he was really, really good defensively on Saturday. I think he can get better in that department, but it seems like he wants it, and that's so much of defense in the NBA.
Yeah.
You got to want it, man. You got to have a desire to play defense. Not everybody has that. I think that's growing a little bit for Luka as he starts to mature and get older in this league.
You got yourself a guy, man. It was Nash and Dirk when they first started, and I thought, okay, can this duo get it done? And Dirk just got better and better. He's not at Dirk's level yet, but for 21 and you're building around someone, you really can't ask for much more.
No. No question about that. So there's the BK Lounge talking some NBA, a little Luka magic for y'all on a Monday. It's the Triple Option with RBKD, Rod Babers, Kevin Dunn, BK with y'all. We've got one segment to go. We'll tell you what's on tap, but we're getting into what we'll be watching in the world of sports and beyond up next.
Pop a top again.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this pan?
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been known to drink a beer or two.
I think a man working outdoors feels more like a man if you can have a bottle of suds. It's only my opinion, sir.
I got beer.
I got bottled breast milk.
Why don't we start with the beer?
Okay.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere. Wait, it's already 5 o'clock here. It's time for What's on Tap.
How about a nice cool drink?
That's really good.
That's good.
Pop a top again. I've just got time.
Welcome back to the Triple Option with RBKD. Time to wrap it up and put it in the oven. And hopefully we get more good news than bad news tomorrow following the college football chaos. And, of course, we'll be keeping you abreast of everything happening in the college football world. But in the meantime, gentlemen, what's on tap for tonight other than NBA? I do want to go home and see if I can watch some of this Raptors Bucks game that's on, but the Raptors are
better hurry up.
On the Bucks.
Yeah.
Raptors are very, I mean, it's amazing what they're doing. I don't know how you do what the Raptors are doing in the NBA without a true superstar, but they're doing it.
Nick Nurse should be coach of the year, man.
You could argue that.
I'm telling you, everybody counted the Raptors out after the offseason. Right? You guys won a championship, that's cool, but the only reason you won it was because of Kawhi Leonard, and he's not there anymore, so you guys don't have any chance. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. The Raptors are also top five in the league, maybe bottom five, depending on how you want to word it, in terms of games lost to injury. They've dealt with more injuries than just about any team in the NBA, yet they've got the third best record in the NBA. What they're doing is ridiculous, and they are legit NBA title contenders once again this year, even without Kawhi Leonard.
That's crazy.
I'll watch that. Nuggets-Lakers on TNT at 8 o'clock. You got another nationally televised basketball game that could be entertaining.
Lakers are hard to watch.
Yeah.
So the Lakers are playing a bad version of basketball in the bubble.
They're, you know, they've got the one seed locked up, so there's questions about motivation.
I hope so.
Questions about, are they really that good? I'm a little bit nervous about the Lakers. Whether or not they've got a legit shot to win an NBA championship this year. But, yeah, I'll check that out. And then Rangers and Astros both in action. Stros are on national TV.
Also, a bad watch, the Houston Astros.
Yeah, lately they have
another
been.
Another bad watch.
I mean,
man,
they're just calling in these dudes off the street to come pitch for them these days, it seems like. But that's an ESPN game, so it's nationally televised against the Gigantes.
That was the other thing with Laureano. And once again, I blame who's the hitting coach?
Cintron.
Yeah, I blame him the most. But like, they've got so many new pitchers, and Dusty Baker even said that. He's like, look, we've got 10 rookies up here that have never pitched in the big leagues, and there are. Yeah. I know there's no crowd, but it is getting to them a little bit.
They're probably going to set the record for rookies who make their debut in a season.
I would think
in like a 60 game season, which is crazy, but they just don't have it. You can tell their body language as a Nationals fan watching them, they're losing their swagger. Like, they came into the season with swagger, chip on the shoulder. We got to show everybody out there they were wrong about us. We're champions. And I think now the circumstances, everything is just beating them up. The injuries, and they don't even look
no
like the
trash
same
cans.
Team. No trash cans. No trash cans. Hey, that's hurting too.
It's in their head a little bit. Josh Reddick said after the game, he said, I hope that this doesn't blow up. He said, we don't need any bigger of a target on our back.
Exactly.
And for a major league hitter like that to come out and say, look, we are thinking about it, and we do know that a lot of people are pissed, and we are worried we're going to get our head taken off.
Well,
that kind of tells me psychologically where they're at. I will check that out because Lance McCullers is going. McCullers started off really hot. He's got a 9.22 ERA now, so that's changed. And then the Padres, to me, are they're kind of that fun young team with Tatis. Obviously, you've got Machado. They've got some – I like Grisham, too, actually. They've got some different guys that I like. And then they'll be taking on Dustin May. That'll be on ESPN+. Plus. Dustin May coming off a big-time start. He is the redhead, the carrot top with gas.
It's a good way to describe it.
Oh, I'm sure Carrot Top, he looks like he has gas.
Yeah.
He's bloated.
Yeah. Rangers on tonight, also against Seattle. We'll have that on AM 1260 for you Rangers fans out there.
Kyle Gibson, Justin Dunn.
Are you watching any relation?
Black Irish, baby. I love him.
Is that a yes or a no?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a yes and a no.
Just making sure.
It's both. It's both.
But plenty of baseball, plenty of basketball. No hockey. The Stanley Cup playoffs get going tomorrow. Stars at 4:30 during the show. I'm just letting y'all know right
now.
I'm
not going to be here.
I'm going to be here. I'm just going to be a train wreck.
Okay.
And I'm going to make sure my mic is off.
He's going to be distracted the whole show.
And is it going to be one of those shows?
Some would argue that's better.
Is it going to be one of those shows there where every 5 minutes you're coming in and there's not even a score update, but you're just kind of letting us know what's going on?
I wasn't going to.
Essentially, you're doing play-by-play here.
I wasn't going to, but I will now.
Okay.
I don't like your attitude.
I've heard that before. I had a dime for every time I've heard that. All right, that's going to do it for us. Instant Serious, is coming up next.
And serious.
So we got Sam. We got Patrick. Mm-hmm. We will be back tomorrow. Bucky and Aaron will get you started at 6 o'clock. God knows what is going to change from now until then. For Rod Babers, for Brad Kellner, I'm Kevin Dunn. Go enjoy the rest of the night. Peace, y'all.